I'm Elena Hutchins Lyle.
And I'm Harvinder Vadva.
We're the hosts of Inappropriate Questions, and we're back with season 3.
With some fantastic guests, we break down questions like,
is asking where are you from appropriate small talk?
Is it okay to ask a coworker how much do you make?
Should you ask a polyamorous person, do you get jealous?
Inappropriate Questions season 3. Available now on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello.
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 Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Dr. Brian.
Happy New Year. Nice I'm Dr. Brian Goldman. This is White Coat Black Art. We're at the home of Heather Badenoch in Ottawa. We met her 2 weeks ago. Heather is a living organ donor who helps other families do the same.
And
Sidra and Yusra.
Yes.
Brian, pleased to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
And last but not least,
I'm Colleen. I'm Tara's mom.
Hi, Colleen, Tara's mom. This is a lovely gathering.
Yeah.
This lovely gathering is a reunion of two families joined by the gift of life. 2 years ago this month, Tara DiPrato donated part of her liver to Farha Ali, a donor transplant that might not have taken place but for two things: a bit of serendipity and Heather's knack for helping would-be recipients like Farha find their donors.
Hi, my name is Sidra. I'm Farah's youngest daughter, and I think that's about it.
I think that's about it, too.
My name is Yusra, and I'm Farah's oldest daughter, and I'm just so grateful that we're all here, and my mom is with us today.
Their mom is still with them today in spite of a harrowing medical journey. It began around 2011 when Farha contracted hepatitis C, which eventually caused liver cirrhosis and one complication after another. Farha's belly would get swollen with fluid.
I have too many water in my tummy. And after every 2 weeks, we went to the hospital and take off my fluid. And after 2014 or 15, I don't remember, but 15 is I have a scar in the liver.
As Farha says, she got a lot sicker around 2015. Yusra picks up the story.
You could see it on her face. She was yellow in tone, like jaundiced. I think by that time,
she got tired very easily.
Oh, yes.
It all started with her hepatitis C, and then it converted into a cirrhosis and her ablations, I think it's called.
Ablation, or radiofrequency ablation, is a procedure for liver cancer. Yet another complication of hepatitis C Farha had to deal with. A probe is inserted into the cancer. It delivers electrical pulses that heat and destroy the cancer.
The ablations that she used to get, there was that. And the last was the liver cancer.
And I think the most, it was just a kind of a lifelong thing that she was looking at to get the fluid pumped from her stomach. And it was so many years ongoing, and it was tiring because right after that, right after she recovered from the, you know, getting her fluid pumped, it would be time for it again.
Because it comes back almost as quickly as you remove it. But the cancer...
Put
your mom on the clock.
Yeah,
it because if it had metastasized,
yeah,
then it would be too late to do the transplant.
6 months. That's
6 months. So yeah. So she really, it was like, wow, it was like do or die. Mm-hmm. To sum up, Farha had a liver that was failing due to cirrhosis and liver cancers, both compelling reasons for doing a transplant. But cancers aren't static; they get bigger and they spread. Surgeons say a transplant is not an option when the cancer has metastasized or when the tumors inside the liver are more than 6 centimeters in diameter. To live, Farha needed a donor liver. What were your mom's prospects for a transplant?
So before meeting Heather, we all got tested. We were asked our doctor, and we were told that we weren't a match for the family. There's family back in Pakistan. It was COVID times, so in Pakistan there was family as well, and they were willing as well. But because the doctor had said there's no travel that can be done internationally, so they were kind of out of the running for donating a liver. So we were really very much in a bind, and we were basically waiting for a deceased
deceased donor be available, I guess.
And even then, we wouldn't be sure if it matched, obviously. And we were told, like, if we did find a match, you'd have to come in as soon as possible. But everything was up, kind of up in the air. We didn't really have any other prospects, really.
To try and find a living donor, Sidra and Yusra turned to social media, but their initial efforts didn't pan out. Then, in 2021, their fortunes changed for the better. That's when Sidra and Heather Badenoch met on a transplant Facebook group. Sidra explains.
How did you meet Heather?
Heather introduced herself. I put a mini post, as per se, about mom saying that she needs a donor for her liver and that she's been diagnosed with liver cancer and whatnot. She has a cyst in her organ there. Heather commented on that post and
commented on it, like critiqued it, said you could do better. I can help you with this.
It's just the terminology that they use on Facebook, right?
No, on Facebook. So what did she say?
So she said, I'm a volunteer along that lines. I don't remember exactly what it was, but she basically told us that she's a volunteer. She helps look for living donors and whatnot. So then we messaged each other, went back and forth. She created a whole long post about all the details and the logistics of it. And we were posting it on Facebook groups and communities and sharing it to all these, I don't know, politicians. Keith Algia, remember that?
Yeah.
Yes. We basically were trying to get all our bases covered.
Heather managed to add some bases of her own. She helped the family build a social media webpage complete with photos and an explainer about liver cancer and the urgent need for a transplant. She got a city councillor to post it in a newsletter. And she used some culturally specific networks.
We did. So a website called Muslim Link not only shared her story, but actually on their own initiative and without anything from us, ran it like an ad on their website. I saw it for weeks.
So what's the toughest nut you've had to crack where to find a network for somebody who was isolated? And it's happened 30 times, so you must have helped.
There have been some where they did not have an apparent community or workplace that we could tap into. No HR that I could phone and say, would you distribute this internally? There have been some that were certainly harder than others. But as a communicator, this is where also I like the challenge. Okay, how am I going to figure this out? How to get the message out is what I do every day professionally. And so this is what we tackle. And there are people for whom they just simply don't have a network. And so then when we create the Facebook page, when I make calls to newsrooms, because that's a thing I'm comfortable doing, I can try to get the message out for them in ways that they could not on their own. I will also try to tap into culturally specific communities, culturally specific radio stations, culturally specific newsletters, language specific outlets that are more likely to carry their story because they're one of us. For example, a woman's need for a liver donor, and we haven't found one yet, just ran in a Portuguese newspaper in Toronto. And she will be also a special guest at a Portuguese fundraising event that will happen in Toronto for transplant. And so her Portuguese community is embracing her and helping her to amplify that message. And so that is an approach that can work quite well.
As is tapping into the transplant community.
Of course.
Because not everybody's been a donor. I mean, there may be a lot of people. There may be a vast circle around somebody who has either been a donor or a recipient. And now you're networking with their, so that's another community. And you know, what's interesting about that is that this person who comes from a disadvantaged background is now tapping into a community where they're actually finding their people.
Yeah.
That crosses cultures, doesn't it?
Yeah. It does. It crosses cultures, and people Ultimately, all we're asking with these campaigns, we're not actually ever asking someone to be a donor. The ask is always hit the share button, tell someone, share this with your network. Just help us spread the word. We don't actually ask anyone to be a donor because we donors know that when the right person sees it,
they just do it.
They'll do it. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. It'll feel right.
Yusra and Sidra say they were grateful for Heather's expertise and her help, but
you were skeptical in the beginning.
A little. I was very skeptical. I honestly, before, because I thought, you know, there's no chance. Like, what is Facebook going to do? I'm going to be the first one to say that I was very skeptical. I didn't think it was going to pan out to anything, but I was very nicely surprised, and the work she does is just absolutely amazing. There can't be enough praises there.
So what was it about the work that you noticed that was amazing?
So it had a wider, much wider reach. So before I had posted, and Sidra had posted, like, just on her Facebook, like in news feed. So it was only reaching our friends. And when Heather created that page, it had a far wider reach. I guess, like, I don't know exactly how it works, but because I'm not very Facebook savvy, but far wider reach than we had kind of planned to.
Then a bit of luck and a pivotal connection.
For all of the targeted work that happened, how we ultimately found a donor was that I posted this because she's a neighbor, because she lives close by, in a Facebook group called Nepean Being Neighborly. And it's our local Being Neighborly group where you ask, where can I get my tires changed? And who likes wings at what spot, right? Neighbor stuff. And I put it in there. And the woman who became Farha's donor saw it.
That woman was Tara DiPrato.
Hi, my name is Tara, and I donated part of my liver to Farha so that she could have a better life.
We'll be right back.
From CBC Podcasts and the Fifth Estate, Brainwashed is a multi-part investigation into the CIA's experiments in mind control. From the Cold War and MKUltra to the so-called War on Terror, we learn about a psychiatrist who used his patients as human guinea pigs and what happens when the military and medicine collide. Listen to Brainwashed on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to White Coat Black Art. This week, Farha Ali gets a new liver thanks to some effective marketing, a bit of luck, and a selfless living donor named Tara DiPrato. Tara saw a posting on a Facebook group based in Nepean, just outside of Ottawa.
What was it about the pitch that attracted you?
It wasn't the pitch at all, I'll be honest. It was, I looked at the picture and I knew it was going to be me to donate. I didn't even read the pitch. I read the pitch, but 2 days before I saw the post, I'd actually had a conversation with my partner about how, in theory, I would donate an organ. And then 2 days later, pops up this opportunity that I knew in my body and soul that I needed to do. My head was like, no, you're crazy. Stop. This is ridiculous. But my body and heart knew that I needed to do this. So I slept on it. And then the next day I knew that if I didn't apply to at least see if I was eligible, then I would regret it because I knew that I was the person who was going to be to do this. So I knew I had to, and it wasn't a question. It was a knowing. So I did it. And the pitch, that said, the pitch was great. It had details, you know, just sort of the details of the history of the illness and the urgency. And then the photo that was there just made me see the sadness and the pain. And I just wanted to help. So I did. I applied.
Tara said she wanted to help. Then she told people in her circle.
Not everyone agrees with your decision, and not as everyone is supportive, and that is the most difficult part of it.
So you've had issues like that?
I had some people in my life that weren't fully supportive, at least at the beginning, and, you know, leading up to it, basically. And having to deal with that was not a positive experience. But once you talk to people and you sort of get them to understand where you're coming from, they still might not agree with you, but it's even that's raising awareness. And, but it is a difficult conversation to have with some people. And, some people think you're flat out crazy. I was called crazy by more than one person, but I was like, eh, could be worse. If my crazy is helping someone, then I'm okay with that.
Was that the first time you'd applied?
Yeah. Yep.
So you weren't a would-be donor until no. That was a very short courtship.
No, it was, I saw the picture, knew that I was going to be doing it. It was a divine intervention. I'm not a religious person, but this has made me a lot more spiritual because I knew. And I knew that if I didn't, that she might not make it because I didn't know if anyone else out there was going to, but I knew that I could. And this is all without any scientific background. This is no testing done. I just knew. So I had to apply.
So what happened next?
Next, I got really scared because they did the initial assessment and said that I could go through with it. And I was like, uh-oh, now I'm in. And so, but then I went for testing in Toronto and they did a lot of different tests. They test every possible thing. And then I made it through that round of tests, which was terrifying just because they're testing every part of your body. You're not sure if they find something else that's not related to this. It's bad news, but you know, you go through that fear, but then every step, like my heart knew this was happening already. So every step was just a step closer to what was supposed to happen. And then I went for a second round of tests later on. And then they called me and said that I was a match and that we could go ahead with it and to pick a date. And they gave me two options. One was very close and one was about a little while later. Because it was COVID, I just said, go for the one that came first. And then we did. And then I guess Farah and her family must have found out. I'm not quite sure because at the time they didn't know who I was and I didn't have contact with them. So it was a bit mysterious and I was just hoping that they thought it was good news.
Yeah. Farah got word that there was a match for a living donor.
I and my whole family is very happy and God for thanks. She is very nice and her all family is very nice because they will... they will give me a liver. So I am very happy because I like I am blank. Somebody give me a piece of a body.
You're surprised, shocked.
Yeah, shocked. Yeah, you are right.
I want to ask the skeptic. Were you there when the call was received?
I think it was like a week or so before the surgery actually happened. Mm-hmm. I think Dad picked it up, and then as Mom heard it, Dad picked up the phone, and then he was like, "Oh, it's the transplant team calling." So then Mom picked up the phone too, and we're all like, "What's going on?" Yeah. And they give us the news, and we're like, "Oh my God." And started crying. I think there were a lot of happy tears that day.
They told me afterward, and I did, tears were flowing, and then I'm like, that was very wrong, my thinking. So if anybody out there is skeptical about this whole
social
everything
media
that
thing.
Yeah, social media, everything that Heather does, her volunteering activities to match up people for liver donations, I mean, it works. It really does work.
Unlike Heather's donor transplant, this one was not anonymous. As Tara mentioned, she had seen Farha's photo as part of the social media campaign, but Farha's family hadn't seen her, at least not yet.
One of the social workers I worked with at the hospital said, you know, there's an uneven power dynamic when you know who the person is and the recipient doesn't know who you are. So that kind of weighed on me. So I woke up, I didn't plan this, but I just woke up 2 days before the surgery. I think all of us were in Toronto at the hotel, and I just messaged on this Facebook page that they had set up. And I'm like, hey, just wanted you to know that I'm the person donating to your mother. And then I think it was Yusra called me immediately. She's like, can I please call you? So she called me. And then, of course, we started crying on the phone. And then, so I ended up meeting them then. And then I think in person we met for the first time in June. I believe it was June of 2022. Because the surgery was in January.
COVID, and we were trying to give her, you know, be safe with her, be safe with my mom. So, but I can tell you, I don't know if Tara, do you want to say? Yeah. but the when we were at the hotel, the whole time since we found out and since until we found that out that was Tara, the whole time my mom just wanted to know, like, who is it? I want to thank them. Who is the person that is donating the liver to me? So we had obviously... we didn't know until we got the call, and we were all in the same room. I think we called her. Yeah, we called
her. You guys were on the way to Toronto. I got the message on Facebook. I called Tara right after. Yeah,
okay.
It's
okay.
Yeah, sorry.
It's okay. But I remember talking to Tara at the hotel. First time, I guess, right before the surgery, we all talked to her. That's what I remember.
Yeah.
Finally, Farha got the transplant she needed to survive.
Before surgery, I was very nervous, but I am very happy.
Aside from a bit of pain when she woke up from surgery, Tara found it a lot easier than she had anticipated.
Oh, my goodness. I'd never had surgery before. So I'd never been put under. So for me, that was the scariest thing. I wasn't as concerned about the actual surgery. I was more terrified of being put under because I didn't know what it would feel like. But the anesthesiologists were amazing at the hospital and they just put me right out. And so I was terrified leading up to the surgery. And then when I woke up, I just remember waking up being like, oh my goodness, what did I do? Because it was so painful. Yeah. But then after about 5-10 minutes, pain medications went in, and then I was recovering for a little while, and it was very weird to have this giant incision in your body, but you know, your body is an amazing thing and it can heal quickly, and it was good.
Okay, and then also there's this lovely what do you call this, a Danish? Looks like jam.
Yeah. Danish.
I can cut it in half if anybody would like, but please don't be shy.
Two families bound together by the gift of life. Watching it all unfold is the woman who helped make it happen, Heather Badenoch.
It continues to show that complete strangers will step up and help each other. And these two women who had never previously met, aren't from the same culture, have many things not in common. May not have met otherwise. And Tara saw it and decided, I'm going to do it. And she did. And then there's also a bit, like the fruit.
Yeah, I'll definitely have some fruit.
Do you guys, Heather and Tara, feel like you've got a connection to one another?
Yeah. I do because before the surgery, we went for a walk. We walked for I don't even know. We went around my neighborhood twice because I had to ask her questions just about things, like practical things about the surgery, like what do I need in the hospital? What will happen to my digestive system afterwards? Just to, you know, get some, because it's different, right? I was able to talk to Heather actually pretty extensively before I even met Farah and her family. So, yeah, in that way, definitely.
So she gave you her experience?
Yep. She gave me her experience, and it was helpful for me. It put my mind at ease a little bit because it's a scary prospect to think of. So it was really nice to talk to someone and just get their experience and know that everything's okay.
Peer support is essential to this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had peer support as well from someone who had been a non-directed donor before me. The hospital offered to introduce me to someone. I accepted, and they matched us very well. We have a lot in common. We're still in touch. And so that peer support, the transplant team, the everybody gives you so much information. There's a manual online. There's tons of information. There's also things that you need to hear from a peer, from someone who's done it, it's completely different. And it didn't inform my decision to do it or not do it. I'd already decided. But you get little critical tidbits that it's just really helpful along the way.
This is such an important story because of the larger context that Canada is a laggard when it comes to organ donation, that we do fewer per capita donations than a lot of other countries. You're pouting now.
Wouldn't it be amazing if everybody could get the organ that they need, whether it's deceased donation, whether it's living donation, whether it's medical advances? There's interesting work going on in xenotransplantation where organs from animals are being transplanted into humans. Wouldn't it be amazing if also medicine advanced to the place where transplant wasn't necessary, where we could stop these diseases in their tracks before they got to a place? I mean, I have a lot of hope, and I believe in people. And so I like to believe that my volunteering, my small little contribution, helps to close the gap that little bit for these people. And that the more we have conversations like the one you and I are having right now, just normalizes that, like, some normal person with a dog lives in the suburbs can just step up and do it.
Farah and her family are immensely grateful to Tara. Both are grateful to Heather for bringing them together.
I think the most important role she played, we wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for her. You're so awesome.
Yeah, Heather is a nice person, and she very helpful, and I am very happy with her job.
She did a good job.
Yeah,
good job.
Good job.
I honestly would never have, I don't think I ever would have seen the ad, because it was in a neighbor, I was randomly in this neighborhood group, and then this was posted in that group. So the outreach that was done to get it to more people in the public was incredible, because without that, you would not be able to find people. I think, as Yusra and Sidra mentioned, if it's just your friend group, it is your friend group, and they can spread it to other people, but you don't know who you're not reaching. So having that outreach is really important.
In 2022, just under 3,000 organ transplants were performed in Canada. One in five of them used living donor organs. That's according to the Canadian Institute for Health Information. That year, 273 people died while on the wait list. The world would be a kinder place if there were more people like Heather Badenoch and Tara DiPrato. That's our show this week. Our email address is whitecoat@cbc.ca. If you like this episode, please give us a rating and review wherever you listen. White Coat Black Art was produced this week by Samir Chabra, with help from Stephanie Dubois and Isabel Gallant. Our digital producer this week is Ruby Buiza. Our senior producer is Colleen Ross. We have some important scheduling news for you. Beginning this week, White Coat Black Art is on Saturdays at the slightly new time of 1:30 p.m. in most parts of Canada, 2 p.m. in Newfoundland and Labrador. The Sunday time slot remains the same. That's medicine from my side of the gurney. I'm Brian Goldman. See you next week.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.